Killer Keller podcast. Killer Keller official.com.
THTC, the UK's leading ethical streetwear label. Organically grown and ethically built garments from hemp, organic cotton and other sustainable materials. 2019 is their 20th anniversary year. Join me with THTC as a Killer Keller podcast sponsor celebrating music, social activism, hemp and street culture. THTC, eco-fashion redefined since 1999.
Beatbox created
Killer Keller,
and we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller
podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning wherever you are. We are here, you are there. Killer Keller podcast. Subscribe. Big shout out to Graffiti Kings in the place, and an absolute pleasure again. The Los Angeles area of Wilshire and. Where is it? Wilshire, La Brea, some...
Roughly, I think we call it La Brea, or Miracle Mile, if you want the neighbourhood.
Ah, the Miracle Mile, see? Get about round here with a new friend of mine. Goes by. In fact, let me just break it down before we go any further. MC, freestyler, comedian, Brit abroad over here, currently killing it internationally. And if you're in England, the likelihood is you probably won't know too much about this character, but he's all over the shop. He is all over the place. His name is Chris Turner. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. That was such a nice introduction.
Do you like that?
Yeah, it felt very American stand-up show, because all the stand-up shows over here, they're like, you've seen this guy on Letterman, on Leno, on Conan. Please, and I'm always sat there as an audience member going, no, I haven't. Don't tell me who they are. Just be like, this next comedian's very funny. Please welcome this. I get into arguments with comedians all the time over here. They're like, this is my intro. I'm like, I'm just going to say that you're really funny. They're like, no, let them know I'm on this. I'm like, fine.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying, isn't it, in a way that you need that validation.
To make the crowd trust you. It's like, no, you can trust us because we're on stage. I just get them to say, from the UK, because then they go, ooh, he must be funny. He can afford tickets.
Yeah, totally. He wouldn't be here if he wasn't funny.
Exactly. That's how I feel. That's why I don't do comedy in the UK anymore, because it doesn't have that impact.
And also, there's something really, like, organic about the culture of America, like, totally being into... Like, there's comedy stores in a lot of places. There's Chinese... Back of Chinese restaurants, there's a comedy store. Back of a comic store, there's a comedy store. Mm-hmm. It's so embraced, comedy over there.
They've had it here for so long. Yeah. I always think... I mean, someone told me that the US comedy scene is at least 10 years ahead of the UK's. And that's not to do the UK comedy scene down, because there are amazing comedians over there. But... it definitely feels like comedy is a part of the American culture. Like,
yes.
Everyone knows about the two drink minimum. Everyone knows that you're going to go out and you're going to, you know, how comedy shows work over here. Whereas in the UK, people are like, oh, it's stag night. Should we go for a comedy show?
Yes.
Rather than there's a culture here of, oh, we go and see some comedy, because it's kind of integral to their... I mean, that's maybe a very coastal opinion. Like, I think LA is a comedy town, New York's a comedy town.
Yeah.
Maybe in the kind of flyover states, it's less so.
Yes,
but perhaps, even then, the fact that all these states and cities can support so many comedy clubs,
it's amazing.
Fewer than they used to, but still many, is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I don't actually know of many like comedy spots in London or England. Not ones
there's,
like.
There's plenty of great clubs, but just fewer.
Fewer.
There's a smaller place.
Smaller thing, yeah. And to cut through the noise here, I mean, there's a lot of comedians, and it's just I find it incredibly interesting the angle that you've kind of crept on the scene with, and as a USP, I mean, it's undeniable. You've landed in the right country for it.
I have. So for people, we're kind of burying the lead here for people who are not familiar. I do freestyle rap in my comedy shows, and when I do it anywhere outside America, people are like, "Wow, that's really good."
Mm.
When I do it in America, people get it more. So I play New York a lot, and I'll play the Comedy Cellar there, which is like the place you want to play. And a lot of the MCs there are older guys who've been around the New York scene for a long time and have crossed over with like the New York hip-hop scene. And so I'll do shows, and then they'll come up to me and go, that was good. And I'm like, thank you. They go, no, you don't understand. My friends are these rappers, and that was good.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's cool. They're like, no, seriously. It's good. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And it feels like an audience over here get it more than a British audience do.
Yeah.
Because an American audience know what freestyling is, because they grew up like listening to hip hop and freestyling themselves. Whereas in the UK, no one's freestyling, like not a comedy audience. Whereas here people are like, oh, I tried to do that when I was at school. I always sucked. And so they get it more. And so therefore the reaction is huge compared to being in the UK.
I agree with you in part. I think you're dealing in the source. This is where it's come from. And when you marry that with the comedy, and it's still a live performance-based thing. It's a bit like beatboxing. I always marry the comedian with a beatbox, because you are actually going out on stage on your own, doing it. So when you talk about these other comedians that are like, yo, but you don't understand, I know these other people, and they haven't got a flame on you. Like by comparison, like you're great. It's because they kind of come from the same cycle of performance, and isn't it? It's a very similar sport.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I'd say that it's all very combative. Like it's you and
combative,
the mic versus the audience. Combative. When you're in America, it's very hard to remember which syllables get stressed.
Mm.
Like I'll say something on stage, I'll be like an advertisement, and people are like,
yeah.
What? I'm like, oh, sorry, an advertisement. Oh, it was so hard for you to figure out what I meant. Like, celebratory. And they're like, no, celebratory. And I'm like, shut up. You know what the word is.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we quibbling over this?
Potato, potato, isn't it?
Exactly. But then I find myself going home, because I am in the UK occasionally, and I'll say words that I realize, oh, no, I've started saying trash.
Yeah.
Or, you know, garage. And no one wants to hear you refer to garage music.
It's nylon, isn't it? It's a nylon accent. I would imagine you going over to the UK and being like, oh, like, I sound American in England, but you're over here and you sound English to the American.
I did have a friend say, oh, you're losing your English accent. And I was like, how dare you? How dare you? If I lost that, my whole... The thing is, like, I'm not funny. I'm just foreign. So over here, I walk on stage, I'm like, hello. And people go, oh my God, this guy's hilarious.
Yeah. You've already cue jumped into
you
the...
You need the accent.
Yeah.
So if it goes any worse, I'm going to have to start walking on stage being like, good evening, my fellow citizens. It's a pleasure to be, like, really English it up.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Almost go the complete wide of out of character kind of over.
Exactly.
With freestyle, just going back to the freestyle thing, I do feel... The angle you're coming from, there's plenty of competent freestyle MCs in the UK.
Definitely.
But there is a non-compliance with them that there has to be a British accent, it has to be regional, there has to be dialect, there's rules to the freestyle thing. And often I'm like, where do these rules come from? Like, when I hear you freestyle, there's clearly an American accent going on, but I understand why that is.
I think it depends on the video. I change the accent to the beat.
And I kind of like that factor.
Especially earlier videos, there are more American accents, but then since I've started doing stuff over here, I definitely lean harder into a British accent.
Do you? Because I would have thought that it was more catered towards them appreciating the flow. And how you're literally like... I mean,
I guess that's true. One thing I always find weird is if people go, oh, why have you got an American accent when you sing or rap? And you're like, oh, like everyone does. Like when you sing, your accent rounds out in a way that sounds more American
100%.
Anyway. Like 100%. Adele speaks like a, you know, proper British person. But then when she sings, you're like, you couldn't tell where she's from.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Your voice changes so much and it's always weird. And I'm like, a lot of the time I'll choose an accent that fits the song. And plus... In my freestyles now, I've been working more on voices. So I was editing one, like a video to put up. And I was like, oh, I use three different voices in this. There's like the voice of me rapping it. But then there's a bit where I'm playing someone's dog who's been left at home and I'm rapping like a dog. And then another one where I'm rapping like a Martian because someone wants me to rap about Martians. And it's really fun.
That's crazy.
Oh, and I rap as the woman who owns the dog. So I was like, oh my God.
That's so sick.
It's really fun. And you see the audience respond to that. And like quite often I'll... Yeah, if someone has a heavy accent, if someone was like, baked potatoes, I'd do the baked potato section of the rap in a Scottish accent because it's funnier.
Yeah. It's curious as well, because like if you've... Yeah, it's not a pick on a particular accent for the comedy value, but it's when you actually trade places with the character you're talking about and keeping in time with the relevance of the word you or phrase you've been given and told to rap about. That's a lot of... patting head and rubbing stomachs going on there. That's a lot of thinking in different ways, isn't it?
Well, I'm always trying to maximize the work I'm doing on stage without making it work. So I'm, when I'm freestyling, I'm never thinking about it, right? Mm. So I was watching back the video from last night today. I was editing it and I was laughing a lot because I was like, oh, I didn't think he was going to say that, because I'm not thinking of me as me. I'm thinking of watching this performer, because I don't remember what I said, because that's if it's cool. subconscious and not prepared or not thought, how could you know what you were going to say? And if I watch a freestyle back and I can predict what the rhyme's going to be or what topic I'm going to do, then that means I was conscious and thinking, and the freestyle's probably bad. And I think that's that's why find it hard to freestyle to a really great level, because you have to get into flow, and that's about being comfortable. So for me, a big secret is, if I've performed at a venue hundreds of times, I'm super comfortable. So I can walk on stage being like, I'm going to nail this. Like, I know the crowd, they're like me. I had shows in Edinburgh where I used to bring the same rug for every show to put on stage. So whenever my feet were on it, I felt comfortable because of the rug, like a comfort blanket.
That's
right?
So sick.
And that means you're able to stop the adrenaline that makes you nervous and use the adrenaline to speed up your brain, which slows down time, which gives you more space to work in. So I therefore have more space to kind of challenge myself with. So rather than just, I've got to make all these words rhyme, I'm like, I've got to make them rhyme, I've got to tell a story, I've got to be intellectual, I've got to be funny, I've got to throw voices in, I've got to put gestures in, and I've got to make punchlines.
Wow, yeah.
But if you can do that without thinking, that's when
that's the level of zen where you just really...
Yeah, it is kind of zen, without being overly spiritual, because I'm not a person who's like, oh, I'm on a higher plane. I don't think I am. I just think I'm super comfortable on stage.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. People are always like, you autistic? I'm like, no. I just think I access a fugue state, which a lot of people with Asperger's seem to operate within.
That's amazing.
Thank you. My cat is licking up crumbs on the floor. On a plate on the floor. I don't leave crumbs on the floor.
Hoover. Yeah. Moving Hoover.
Meowing Hoover. Awful joke.
That's... See? You got a comedian inside the house.
I always say comedians, most of us are only funny on stage. People are always like, oh, you're a comedian? You weren't that funny. I'm like, yeah, because I wasn't being paid.
Yeah,
dude. It's a job.
Yeah, exactly. Beatboxing is quite the same. The amplification of beatboxing is so much more better, in my humble opinion, than it is doing it acoustically. And when someone says, oh, yeah, go on beatboxing, it's like, I kind of don't want to. It's just not going to be the elevated, like, technical, industrious sound you expect.
Well, exactly. Beatboxing is not just about this. It's about this and the control. And I was watching Joker on a plane, and then my brother-in-law, who was staying here, was like, oh, that soundtrack, like, that's going to win the Oscar. It's so cool. And I was like, really? I didn't notice much. He was like, what were you listening on? I was like, little airplane headphones, because I have my Bluetooth headphones, but they don't plug in.
That's
like,
right,
it's the most annoying thing with AirPods. You can't wire them. Like, they should have an adapter for that. So I had to listen on the stupid little over ones. Like, of course you're gonna miss all, like, the detail, like
all the good bits.
And I was like, oh, so now I have to watch Joker again, which is annoying because I didn't really think it was that great, just to listen to the sound. I'll just listen to the soundtrack.
I must admit, I'm on the fence with a lot of movies. I don't watch enough of them, and it's only when I'm on planes that I actually, you know, you get a chance,
which is a great place to watch movies, because you always forget the movie, I think. And then, so if it's good, you watch it again. If it was bad, you're like, oh yeah, I never...
That's true.
I lost the 2 hours of my life, but I was losing them anyway because I was on a plane.
Exactly. There's something very sweet about that. Oh, I can't use my phone, can't do anything. Batteries run out on my laptop because my laptop's shit. I'm just going to chill here. You must do a lot of travelling. There must be a lot of travelling under your
belt. There is. But it's weird, actually. It's weird to think of that, because I had a joke in my show. I was doing a show in Australia. And I had a joke about, I talked about, like, you know, the environment. And then I was like, I'm aware of the kind of hypocrisy of me lecturing you on the environment whilst having flown halfway around the world to do this show. However, what's the alternative? 100 of you fly to LA to see me? That makes no sense, right?
Yeah, okay.
But it is weird to think about how, as, like, flight shaming increases, that whole kind of Nordic concept of people aren't going on their holidays on planes or posting about it because people are kind of jumping on them being like, hey, you seem to go on a lot of holidays on planes.
Yeah.
It's weird to think how that's going to affect touring artists. And I know that, not to bring up Coldplay, I'm not sure how often Coldplay get brought up on this podcast, but they are like, we're not touring anymore until we can figure out how to make it carbon neutral and not, because, like, we are one of the biggest bands in the world, but also that gives us a responsibility. And if you think about it...
I didn't know that. This is news. I don't know.
It's a big deal. And I think it's really cool. And obviously, they're in a position where they don't need to tour anymore. Mm. And ideally, they would never tour anymore. Stop spreading your disease. Battle rap me, Chris Martin. Thing is, I'm sure he's a lovely, lovely person. And well done on getting their success.
Yes.
But...
That being said...
It is interesting how touring will develop. Like, now we have, you know, Whitney Houston holograms performing. Are we going to do an MF Doom and send out, you know, do I want to put a mask on a local person and send them to do my show instead of me? Now, it wouldn't work because I'd be like, okay, I can't franchise what I do because I'd have to audition so many good freestylers. Like, cool. If I suggested Afghani irrigation ditches, what are you going to rap about? I don't understand any of those words. You can't be me. You can't be me. But I do kind of feel weird about the whole amount of flying. It's hard, especially in America, because there used to be trains. There used to be trains all across the country.
No, there isn't anything.
And now there isn't. Like, I was in Chicago going to New York. I was like, oh, I have a day in between the shows. Maybe I could take a train. Now, there is a train. It takes 24 hours. I was like, okay, that'd be a cool way to see it. Like, I wonder how much the tickets are. The ticket to sit on the train, not with a bed, because they have beds. The ticket to sit on the train was more than a plane ticket. And you're like, well, okay, the convenience and this money saving. But 24 hours in a seat on a train? Oh, I wonder how much a sleeping cabin is. Yeah. It was $1,000.
What?
You're like, well, of course I'm not going to do that. Can't afford $1,000. To fly to a gig for $100 or whatever? Like, no.
That just begs belief. You've got planes, you've got hotels, both of which are way more convenient than going on a train ever would be. That's really sad. Yeah, I was on the United flight over, and they got budget. I would argue that everyone was just on a budget. Like, there was no one up the front. Mm-hmm. Of this United Air.
Which is weird because so many people in America have frequent flyer miles and they always get like bumped up if they have them. So it must mean that like no one on that flight was like a frequent flyer.
Yeah, none of them. So everyone's at the back of the plane and there was like a whole half the plane with empty seats. And I was like, man, this is so bad for the planet. These planes flying out like that. And then they get these token that'll help the young, help the homeless, help the, you know, the little bags that you donate, coins that you don't want. And I'm just like, this is just token bullshit. Because if you were to just sort your planes out and had everybody flying back and forth within a smaller number of flights per day, utilize all this space, that's really making a big difference. Do you know what I mean? It's just money, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard. There's so many difficult things to try and like talk about and balance and without being hypocritical and all these things. It's the thing that makes me uncomfortable all the time.
Yeah. Because like you say, on balance, it's a high class problem because we're the ones doing the traveling. Do you know what I mean? It's like Chris Martin probably does have a good point. You know what I mean? But in an age where prices, it's expensive to live in LA, it's expensive to live in London, and there's not often the workload that can allow you to have any sort of career in a profession that you start off doing, and you're just constantly an apprentice. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing an apprenticeship, this whole thing, and you've got to find the work. You can't stay in the same country, can you?
No, I mean, it's also fun. Like, one of the reasons I love doing comedy is that you get to tour the world, right? Mm-hmm. That's so cool. But then also, see, this is the kind of weird thing. Inside, I'm like, but I am the type of person that should be traveling. Like if you are talented, you should be sharing that with people. You should be giving. People are always like, when are you coming? Someone today was like, hey, when are you coming to Tonga? I was like, I don't know if I'll ever come to Tonga. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if there are enough fans of mine in Tonga. Yeah, I was like, maybe you start sharing my videos and we'll sell 100 tickets. And then if you can sell 100 tickets in Tonga, I'll come to Tonga.
Tonga.
Anywhere in the world, if you sell 100 tickets to my show, I will come to you. But
I'll second that as well.
Yeah. I was in the UK. I had some free days. I put a post on my YouTube. I was like, hey, first three people to comment from a place, I'll come there and do a show. So I ended up going to Hamburg to do a show.
That's amazing.
And it was great. We had 60 people in Hamburg with a week's notice. I was like, that's insane.
Fucking love that.
I got to go to Hamburg. This is why the internet is the best thing in the world. This is why I got to go to Hamburg. I got to do tourism. I was there for 3 days, which is too long. Hamburg is a 1.5 day city max. Sorry, Hamburg. Please have me back.
Hold tight, Dennis, for that one.
But Yeah, I feel like artists, we should travel and we should tour because people want to see us and we bring joy and entertainment to people. Then there's all the holidays that I took with my family as a child where every summer we'd go to an all-inclusive resort in Menorca. You're like, yeah, we probably didn't need to do that. We could have gone to Blackpool. I would have had equally a nice time. There were fewer massive centipedes.
Yeah, true. Yeah, as a kid, you just kind of go with the flow, don't you, on those sorts of things. Don't know about Blackpool, though.
Love you, Blackpool.
Yeah, actually, that's a good area for comedy and theatre. And
the Blackpool Winter Gardens is a great place.
That's the spot, Yeah, I've been up there too many times, but I do love it. Let's stick with the family and growing up. Where are you originally from?
I'm from Manchester.
From Manchester?
Yeah, from Sale in Manchester. I don't sound like I'm from Manchester, and I don't know why. My mum's from Yorkshire, my dad's from Birmingham, and they both didn't have accents. I know everyone's like, oh, I don't have an accent, but I vaguely sound northern when I say certain words.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said Manchester. But Manchester, you know, you have your own stereotypes there, but a lot of people... I know a lot of northerners that don't have accents. My girlfriend, for instance, she's from Blackpool. That's why I've been up there a lot. And she doesn't have really an accent. So you were in bands? Were you in bands?
I played guitar and I kind of dabbled in weird, very weird, like avant-garde kind of... my favourite music is like... doom and drone and really down tuned stuff where you're manipulating feedback and so I would always like find drummers and then we'd flip it so that I would be the rhythm and they would be the lead, which is kind of weird in a combo, right? But I really liked it, but I was very bad. Like I just had a loud amplifier and no one was doing that. Like I had a band where we would support all the American bands in our genre that would come over because no one would play that music, so we were the only local band that were weird enough. But then as soon as I went to university, I started doing comedy and I was like, oh, I'm way better at comedy than I am at guitar. Why am I bothering with that? Plus comedy somehow seemed to be as like attractive to people as guitar was. Like playing guitar, oh, that's cool. He's hot. He plays guitar. Doing comedy, oh, this guy's funny. He can make me laugh. That's hot.
That's true, man.
What I cared about.
It's amazing when you've got like that secret power, the signature move, the thing that differentiate you, especially growing up as a kid, something that differentiates you from the pack. You become that thing in their mind, don't you? Like being in a band is one thing, but when you are a comedian, I mean, I guess my next door neighbor, his kid's an Irish, he does Irish dancing. He's like the most ghetto kid. He hangs out with his mates and he's like rude, but then he nails the Irish dance. It's like the most random shit ever, right?
That's great.
But yeah, it's a USP, man. It's like, I love that. I love it when things are on the edge like that.
Well, also that combination, like a river dancing road man, is super funny. And like, imagine that, just pulling that out. People wouldn't be like, oh, that's nerdy. They'd be like, oh, that's actually really cool.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden you give it its validation almost.
Yeah.
And that becomes you as a kid, which is always interesting. Did you ever see yourself as, because this is, you know, I'm familiar with doom and I like a lot of metal, but it's, I'm trying to work out how that is adaptable and putting the rap into comedy. When did you get into the rap?
12 years old. So that was because when I was at primary school, I had a friend who... There's two people who are responsible for this. There was a guy called David McLuhan who... He gave me Grand Theft Auto on PlayStation when I was like 10. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't allowed it. And also Limp Bizkit. Right? Nice, new metal. And new metal really was like a way for, I think, a lot of... Especially white kids to first be introduced to kind of rap, rap style delivery.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is cool. And obviously it's not good music, but I was like, oh, I like this. And that kind of opened, because I liked rock, because my dad brought me up with like jazz and blues, because he's like a huge music fan. And then when I went to university, when I went to secondary school, I was like 11, there was a guy called Gulid who was this like crazy kind of entrepreneurial Somalian kid who would burn any CD you wanted. Mm. So he knew that all like the kind of metalhead kids, like me and my friends, we liked grunge. He's like, hey, I'll get you all these Nirvana live albums that he'd get off LimeWire or Kazaa. He'd download them. And the CDs he had were 74-minute CDs, and he'd charge us, I think, £1 for each one.
Okay.
It was very cheap.
Right, okay.
It's like CDs were £10. So you're like, why would I buy the real CD when I get 10 for £10? Yeah, yeah. And they were 74 minutes. And like a Nirvana album's 45 minutes long. Almost not to have some water. Nirvana album's like 50 minutes long, 45 minutes long. There was space on the CD. And he's like, he would fill them up with what he liked, which was rap music. So I was starting to listen to... David also gave me the Marshall Mathers LP by Eminem, which I talk about on stage being the first rap album that I ever loved. But Galeed would be putting on like Wu-Tang and Jay-Z and all this stuff. And I'd be like, oh, this is cool. And then he would also put on Chris Rock tracks. And I'd be like, who's this? He's like, oh, it's Chris Rock. He's the best comedian.
Oh, the No Sex in the Champagne Room.
The tracks from his comedy albums. Yeah. So like, I was listening to these being like, wow, what is this? So I discovered, because again, I listened to comedy, but comedy my dad gave me, which was like satirical musical comedy from the 70s. And like Monty Python, which again, I love.
Yeah, yeah.
But not stand-up. So Galeed introduced me to rap and stand-up. And that kind of then fed through my teenage years where I would listen to rap, but I didn't have any friends to talk about it with. So that's why I started freestyling.
Wow,
the age of 12, I would make up my own raps in my room because I speak about this in like everything I do. There's so many videos of me explaining this, so I'll keep it brief. I used to think that all rap was freestyle because no one was there to correct me.
That's amazing.
So I was like, how can Eminem make up all these lyrics? The interior rhymes are amazing. And also I was like a huge nerd, so I loved poetry. So I was like, these losers write all this. This guy makes it all up. You listen to all these things being like you listen to Wu-Tang being like, well, look at all these words they're using. And they're just pulling them out of their heads. These guys are geniuses. So I was like, oh, rap's the most intelligent music. And everyone was like, yeah, shut up, whatever. It's just noise. Doesn't make sense. So I would make up my own raps. And then when I eventually learned it was written, by then I was like, oh, because I had no limit in my head as to how good freestyle could be.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I got quite good at it when I was like a teenager.
Yeah.
And then when I was 21 doing stand-up, was at a show. I did kids' comedy shows and I made up a song for some kids. And there was a critic there. She's like, you should rap in your adult shows. I was like, no, that seems gimmicky. Yeah. It seems like it shouldn't go together. She's like, no, you'll take roofs off. And then I started rapping in my stand-up shows as a kind of closer.
As a closer?
Yeah, so I'd like, you know, do my jokes and then I'd be like, oh, by the way, I also rap. People were like, what? And then I'd go, yeah, what do you want to rap about? People would say something and I'd do a rap about it. And they'd go, wow, that was great.
Just changed the whole dynamic of the show. That's incredible that you thought that every rapper on a record was freestyling. Mm-hmm. That absolutely blows my mind. It's like, because now when I think about it, me getting into rap in a very similar way as you had, I got into it through Anthrax and Public Enemy because I was into the metal. And then when I heard Public Enemy do something with that, on that heaviness, changed the whole thing. And I can't lie, when I first got into rap, I think I figured that everyone was freestyling.
Well, especially all that early rap, you can definitely see how that's more likely to be made up and probably came out of jamming lyrics anyway. When you think that's what Wu-Tang are doing or Eminem or someone who is like lyrically brilliant.
Yeah.
I also have to clarify, because people, all my like comedy fans, like, oh man, you love Eminem. What do you think about the new album? I'm like, oh, I like old Eminem. Yeah. I liked Eminem when he was transgressive and rude and I was a teenager and wanted that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I hear stuff that he does and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's really cool that you said all these offensive things. Hey, fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a grown man. We're all grown men. Let's move past this.
Do you think there is something, age appropriation with rap?
Well, I think that's just with music in general.
You think so?
In the same way that like, it, you know, now... I listen to, what I don't want to be is like all, you know, my dad who'd go, oh, that's just noise.
Mm.
Now, he was actually very open to a lot of bands I would play him. But, you know, if I listen to like, I'm trying to think of an example. The thing is, I kind of do see the value in a lot of the newer artists. I mean, this is not, there's a new artist, but like kind of like Lil Pump, all that kind of SoundCloud rap from 2 or 3 years ago. so many people are like, oh, what is this? This is shit.
I know what you mean.
Or you watch the XXL freshman ciphers and people go, these guys have no talent. I'm like, it's not. You're judging it by the standards of what you wanted, which was lyricism. And really, no one cares about that. Or a lot of people don't. Like, now it's aesthetics.
Yes, 100%.
And if you judge it on that level, it's great.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
But, like, you know, I'm not listening to Blueface going, wow, this guy really speaks to me. But I'm not listening to it going, this guy can't even rap. Like, yeah, he can't rap. But you know what he can? He can make a massive hit.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult. And I think that's to be appreciated and thought it was cool. So while music speaks to different age groups, yeah, because it should, because it's created by people of that age.
Yeah.
So that's why I find it weird that Eminem is trying to be the Eminem he was 20 years ago.
I have to say that when I'm thinking about that genre of rap, I really want that time capsuled, and I want it to be how what it says on the tin. You know what I mean? Like, okay, he doesn't have to be so crude and as he was, but the competing with younger audience, younger artists, I don't think it serves anyone. Do you know what I mean? There's something really cool. I mean, rock bands are a great example. They'll be them till they die,
yeah,
and they'll come round in trend again, mm-hmm, because they're cool all of a sudden.
The Rolling Stones aren't going to reinvent themselves. They're the sound that they've always been. One thing I kind of want to add is, like, this is me assuming that Eminem, this sounds like I'm saying that Eminem is making music that he doesn't actually want to make. He's making music that he thinks he has to make. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I'm sure he's like, no, this is the music I want to make. But it annoys me when people are like, this is a vendetta I have, because people who like my comedy go, oh, yeah, you must love Eminem. And I'm like, nah, I don't think the new album's good. And they're like, have you not heard this song? He raps so fast. I'm like, that doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
There's this weird thing where technical ability is, especially like vocal speed, is seen as a marker of a great rapper.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I would rather be made to feel something with 10 words than if you fit 40 words into the same time.
Yeah.
And it's not, I don't think it's hard to write a whole verse of multi-syllable words that rhyme, because everyone can get on Rhyme Zone now and can just be like, oh, look at all these words, they all rhyme, let's try and nonsensically string them together.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like no, go and, like, if you want someone who does that, MF Doom is the best. Like, he doesn't rap fast, he can make everything rhyme.
I'm sure
he could rap fast if he wanted to,
but
that would lessen and deaden the impact. This is my own personal thing that gets me angry. And no one agrees with everyone. Be like, shut up, everyone's great, good. I'm glad everyone likes the music they like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's a matter of opinion, isn't it? And, like, also, like you say, when the time you jumped on the Eminem ride was, he was at, you know, ferocious.
Yeah, and the most influential rapper in my life, in the sense that he started me rapping.
Yeah, nothing compares to, you know, Lose Yourself. You know, you could listen to that before you go on it on stage.
Oh, yeah.
You're out, you're vibed up, you're ready. And that's how I remember Eminem. I think that's how everyone will remember Eminem, no matter what Eminem does.
In my head, Eminem is when he wore the blue dungarees and the mask. That's to me who Eminem was. And when you're a teenager and you see that, he's like what punk was to my dad, or, you know, what like Billie Eilish is to, you know, teenagers now.
Yeah,
this person that are, I mean, Billie Eilish isn't a great example because I think parents can understand why people like her.
Yeah,
but.
Which is always, you know, the ingredient for you know, we want fucking ugly, ferocious, scare your parents type.
Yeah,
shit,
exactly. Right? So like my mum would be like, "Who is this? He is awful." And I'm like, "You don't understand."
Yeah, yeah.
You want to feel like you're not understood as a teenager, and so when someone makes your parents not understand you,
yeah, yeah,
you know, not to bring up parents, just don't understand, which is the best rap song of all time,
for real. I mean, look again. Right, you are quoting different rap acts. You're going down these cul-de-sacs in conversations and topics that are inclusive with all these different generations of MCs. You know your shit. And what's really...
I don't think quoting Will Smith counts as knowing 100%, your shit.
100%. Will Smith, man. Will Smith is...
OG.
I'll tell you a story about Will Smith. It was him and Jazzy Jeff and... the beatboxer, I think it's Ready Rock, maybe. They got MTV Raps commissioned on MTV.
Ah, that's very cool.
That's how fucking legit Will Smith is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it wasn't for him, because Run DMC were meant to do it, but they cancelled. So at last minute, Will Smith said he'd do it. And because they had the beatboxer, because they're playful characters, they commissioned it immediately. How amazing is that?
That is great.
But anyway, back to what I was saying, I feel like you're slightly understated in the scene. And it actually surprises me. I mean, maybe it's just me and my complete fucking ignorance, but when I was introduced to you only recently, I was like, fuck, well, why didn't a comedian freestyler? Why has that could be so exploited in so many different ways, you know, from URL rap battles to, you know, Louis C.K.'s level of comedic quality. It's such a awesome concept. I'm just putting it out there. And I just find it absolutely bizarre and baffling how, I mean, I hadn't heard of
it. That's okay. I don't think anyone has.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
It's a compliment. Please take that as a compliment.
No, as in, like, it's very hard to explain things. I've been doing this for 10 years, and I think now I've just got good.
Really good.
Yeah, I think so, and it takes a while to do that. I think the show I'm doing at the moment is the first show that I've really married the two together properly. Like, my show I'm touring at the moment, I just toured it to... It's been in New York. I just toured it to Australia. That's called Rap God, which, oh my God, it's so funny how pissed off people get about that. They're like, dude, you're good, but Eminem is the Rap God. And I'm like, I'm a polytheist. There are multiple gods. but also I'm like, it's a comedy show. Yeah. Obviously, I'm not saying I'm the Rap God. I'm going to call my next show White Eminem just to piss him off.
That's right, just to follow in line with what people's, you know, expectation.
But this is the first show that I've done that is a synthesis of rap and comedy, because I was like, oh, I want to get good at comedy. So I've done like 7 one-man shows that are comedy shows, and within it I would throw in a couple of raps, because that's the thing that sets me apart. But this show is like, it's got written raps, it's got freestyle raps, it's got slam poetry, it's got stand-up, and everyone who sees it's like, this is crazy. And I'm like, oh, cool, this is a show that, like, no one else is doing this kind of show.
Wow.
There are people who do all freestyle shows or all rap shows. I'm trying to bring it all together in a really fun way, and I'm really excited by it. And
that's incredible.
It's cool, but I think maybe that's a thing that might help people know who I am.
I think it will.
I think a big part is that you never see freestyle on TV.
No.
Because I think commissioners are scared of improv in general. And also, I do think there's not that many people who can make it accessible to a wider audience. Like, if you love hip-hop, then you can appreciate a good freestyle.
Mm.
But to appeal to, like, a general public who don't understand freestyling, they... like I said, don't necessarily understand how hard it is.
Mm.
So it has to be good. It has to be good regardless of the fact it's freestyled.
Yeah.
And this is a big thing for me on stage. When I started doing it, I never want the audience to be... I mean, obviously people are surprised because I walk on, I go, I'm going to freestyle. And they go, but you're a middle-class white guy. That's the initial surprise. But I want it to be good because it's good. Mm. I want them to go, actually, that was good.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
So it has to be good removed from the context of it being a freestyle.
Yeah.
So it has to be entertaining, informative, it has to be thrilling, and that's what I work at. And I don't think there are many people who can do that.
Well, yeah, because a lot of people, I mean, not everybody, but it's a very private thing, isn't it, freestyling?
Definitely.
Writing rhymes. It doesn't necessarily mean you build the same rapport as a comedian on stage. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think what I've seen from your shows, and I'd love to see it live, is you have this, like you say, this balance of all these things happening at once that is packaged in a way that kind of rappers should be doing it anyway. They can learn, you can learn a lot from this shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that would be cool is to tour with an artist who is doing music and, like, open for them. And it's something that we've looked into over here. Like, my management have the connections, and I have connections with touring producers, but it's hard to think of who you would do it with, right?
Mm.
Like, if Tyler, the Creator, wasn't as big, he's who I'd want to tour with, right? He's now so big. Yeah. But, like, he has that... He's a rapper who is also a comedian, essentially, like, with all the stuff that he works on or used to work on with, like, his TV shows and things. Yeah. They were really funny, and he clearly has a great sense of humor. And so you need to find... You know, you can't just put me on the road with, like, Travis Scott.
No.
Because the audience would be like, but yeah, but why are you here? Whereas if you go on the road, if you, I don't know, JPEG Mafia.
Yeah.
If I supported JPEG Mafia, I think the audience would get it. I think they'd be like, okay, oh,
he's actually, a good point.
Because, yeah, because he's crazy and weird and funny. Like, he's funny.
Yeah.
Death Grips, right? All that kind of weird rap, not rap.
Punky, hybrid-y.
Yeah. Thing, I think you could have, you know, you could have just a comedian opening, but a comedian who freestyled, people would appreciate that.
You know who I think you'd be, you know who I think you'd be dope alongside? I think someone like a visual turntablist scratch DJ, somebody that's kind of established that can do arenas, because that there is it's a visual thing. It's an appreciative of technicality. Like, people like that stuff. So yeah, like a, you know, like the DMCs and those kind of scratchy DJ things.
Yeah.
I think like someone like Qbert.
Yeah, yeah.
You could go on before Qbert and...
Great, let's call him.
Let's give him a call. Q, you know what to
do. We're
going to
get RJD2 up next. So, you know, you better say yes or...
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, for real, for real. Then, you know, it's just, I think there's a... Yeah, well, that's at least one level up from what... Like, you're low below from what you're saying with JPEG Mafia. Yeah, I can see that too. And things like that. There is a lot of athletical qualities to rapping. Do you think, like, if you were to go and support someone like who we mentioned, they would be in any way threatened because your technicality is so high?
Oh, I doubt that, because if it's your stomping ground, then it's your crowd,
true,
right? And the I was with a comedian last night who I thought I'd met him before, and then I was like, oh, I'm sorry I said that we met before. I've seen you support another act, and I'd seen him open for a comedian downtown, 2,000-seat room. And I remember being super impressed that he walked on and no one knew who he was. And then 20 minutes later, they were like applauding wildly. Like, he'd like killed it. Because you have to grab someone around. Like, I've seen support acts die horrible deaths. Like, I remember seeing a comedian bring out a support act. He was like, he's a friend and a comedian. And for 10 minutes, we were there being like, oh, this is awkward. This is really bad. So
you don't want that neither, do you? That's the last thing.
But I think your fans are always going to love you. Like, I went on at the Comedy Cellar a couple of months back. I like close out the shows there, which is great. It means I have to go on after big comics like Michelle Wolf will get off stage, and then I walk on and the audience are like, why is this guy here? We just had the famous person, we don't know who this guy is, right? And so I have to win the crowd round, do it, and then like end the show hard. I went on an afternoon show, and then they were like, right, that was going to be the end of the show, but we've got to drop in, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Chappelle. And so Chappelle walks on. And that was cool because Mos Def / Yasin Bey was in the audience watching that. So he'd seen me freestyle. Dave, like, when I came off stage, like, introduced himself and shook my hand, which was so cool.
Yeah.
And he goes on. And I was like, going on after the freestyle is hard. But when you're Dave Chappelle, he just walked on. The audience applauded for a minute. He lit a cigarette and did his set. It's not like he has to acknowledge it. Whereas sometimes if a comedian comes on after me, which is... I'm very fortunate that I get to close a lot of shows because it's hard to follow. If a comedian does go on after me, usually they can, comedians are good. They can handle it. They can just, they'll be like, it's a bit annoying because I was going to do a freestyle rap or something like that. But there is, I did support a comedian for 4 dates. It was meant to be a fuller tour. And I did get pulled from the tour without a reason. And when I asked for the reason, I was directed towards a review that had been put out of that comedian's show where it said that he was upstaged by his support act, who was the main highlight of the evening.
No, see?
His show was really bad. It was a really lazy show.
Haters don't hate, okay?
And so that was really funny. I was like, I got kicked off the tour. My agent's like, yeah, but that's a pretty cool reason. I was like, yeah, but I need money.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm gutted as well, you know? I mean, yeah, it's bittersweet, isn't it?
So yeah, I don't think people would be threatened. No. I would hope not. I'm just there to make sure everyone has a good time. Like, that's it. I just want an audience to be happy.
I like the fact that you don't ride too much slang into your freestyles. I've noticed it's all very it all orbits not only around the subject matter you've been thrown, but also I like your in rhymes. I love the fact that you know, there's no slang. It's to the facts. It's you're running off this one thing that's been thrown at you, and you're kind of going back on yourself, and you're zigzagging around.
I'm trying to make links. I'm trying to call back. I had the one I put up last week was super fun because the first topic I start with, I linked it back to solve a problem at the end of the rap.
Crazy.
And also, I mean, I'm not speaking a way that I don't speak. Like, I'm very lucky. I had a super, super good education. So it would feel disingenuous for me to start putting in vocabulary that is not natural for me.
Yeah. Just to conform and get...
Exactly, yeah. Line. Like, it's... Yeah, because I think that's disingenuous.
Yeah.
But also, I will use every word that is available to me because... every word that you know is a possible rhyme, and I want to be able to... I also have to be aware that I should make my raps accessible to my audience. Like, if I'm in a club that's, like, predominantly younger crowd compared to my regular spot, which is, like, the crowd there are skew older, I'm change it up a bit. Especially, like, speed of beats, type of styles. Like, I'm not going to come in with, like, a drill instrumental in a club that's, you know, people 35 and upwards.
Yeah, yeah, true.
I'd save that for a younger crowd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, some boom bap or some West Coast, I might be doing that more at the kind of older club because I know what will get that crowd vibing. And a big part of that is beat. Like, when I play the Comedy Cellar, on the weekend late night shows, like the 1 o'clock shows, they're really hard spots because people are fucked. They're so drunk.
And they're comedied out.
They are. Yeah. And so I have some beats that I will always use. Usually, I change my beat every show if I can because I want to record it, put it online, then I don't want to use the same beat again.
Yeah.
But for gigs I have to smash, I have a certain go-to number of beats that I'm like, this is going to go off. Like, it's got explosions in, it's got bits which drop out. It's why I like performing with musicians and beatboxers rather than beats if I can, because they know when to like let the beat stop and... like emphasize the line.
Yeah. And I bet there's a lot of play on that. As you were just talking there, you said beatboxing. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, there's so many things you can do within that realm that gives you a home field advantage of like keeping people's interests up. I like the idea of you using cannons and stuff in the background.
Just
wake up, you know, within the tune. And
Well, like in my live show at the moment, I have a sampler on stage so I can add air horns, explosions, all that kind of like fire in the booth sound effect the rap as I do. I'm like, because sometimes the audience won't get a line that I've said. And in the past, I used to stop in the middle of the rap and be like, guys, don't know if you just heard what I said. That was incredible. And then go back in. Increasingly, I've stopped doing that because I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, people watch them online, they'll get it in that bit. But if that happens, I'll air horn myself on stage.
I think sometimes that is just a marker of like, I know that this is all right. I just killed that thing. You have to know, recognize that this was good. And you just do. I do believe you're killing it. And I do believe that this is just the beginning of your journey, man. Oh, it's actually nuts that we, you know, that you're just doing your thing. And, you know, for cottage industries and people that are doing stuff in-house and self-employed, doing it their way, not having to rely on a scene, I think that's totally charming. And in America as well, to know that you're out there hustling, it's inspiring, dude. It's fire. So for those that you don't know, this man right here is the future. Telling
your future is straight white and middle class. Have you like that? You,
but again, look, we're just giving it the Billy Big Spuds because it's a time and a place, and now more than ever, you know, comedy is one of the last surviving say what you feel art forms.
Not that I say anything that's of much importance. You know, a joke I did the other night was about sundials. So I'm really hitting the hard topics, you know.
But it's good.
Sundials,
it's still good,
what's
man.
The deal with that?
I like the blending of the two. I like the blending. And like you said before, being great is all that matters. Doesn't matter where you're from, it's where you're at.
Oh, yeah. I always just wanted to be... That's kind of a big thing about me synthesizing comedy and rap, especially comedy and freestyle, is like, make your own niche... and then be the best in that.
Yeah.
Find out what you're good at, of the few things, combine them all together, and then no one can challenge you on that thing because...
Telling you, boy.
You cheated, right? That's the thing. Like, I'm like, oh no, I'm the best comedian who does freestyle rap.
Yeah, yeah.
If I was like, I'm the best comedian, best freestyle rap, people would be like, oh, shut up. I'm like, show me another person who does what I do and does it to the same level, and then it makes it's, you know.
Yeah, but also...
That's fun.
Also, the character, like your face alone, it's almost like... Dude, not in a funny way. I mean, in a remember 'em memorable way.
Yeah.
Like, some of the best comedians I know of, whether it's, you know, Alan Carr or, I don't know, Bob Monkhouse, I don't know, whoever, you just...
I like that we name drop Bob Monkhouse on this podcast. That's so cool.
OG, I'm a big Bob Monkhouse fan.
Rest in power, Bob.
Yeah, hold tight. Did you watch a documentary on him?
I did not. No, I haven't been able to. I know, people keep talking about how great it
is. Crazy, bro.
Ugh.
But yeah, so, look, you know, it's a memorable face. It's a memorable... And you just remember these people for killing it, you know? Leslie Dawson with the wonky piano and, you know, all these sorts of old school things that, you know, and it takes a face, it takes a character, it takes a punch, doesn't it? It's good shit, man. Good shit. I think we'll wrap it up there. We have to. Because I want to do a freestyle with you.
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, Chris. Killed it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Fun, huh? Killer Keller Podcast live and direct, as we do every week for you, all right? Big shout out to Bandstream Media as well, inside the place, all right? Stay lucky, people. Stay out of trouble. Peace.
Bye.